You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And we are seeing in West Virginia, about, what, a sixth of the state can only use their water, their tap water, to flush the toilet. That's it. Don't allow it to come into contact with your skin at all under any circumstances in any way. We are seeing the ultimate example of how a libertarian society would work. Because in a libertarian society, government does not use force to regulate chemical companies, for example. You use the courts. So after people are harmed and after their businesses are destroyed and after their children start getting born with birth defects and after they start dying with cancers or whatever may happen, they then sue. I'm serious. I'm not making this up. This is the libertarian, the objectivist. This is Ayn Rand. This is Atlas Shrugged, right? The remedy is the courts. It's a little nuts, but excuse me. But here's where it gets really interesting. Freedom Industries. Good old red, white, and blue. Freedom Industries polluting West Virginia. Freedom Industries was co-founded by a guy named Carl Lemley Kennedy II. He's a real patriot. He used to work as a snitch for the feds to bust cocaine dealers. Why? Well, because he himself had been arrested and pled guilty in 1987 to selling between 10 and 12 ounces of cocaine. And he got his sentence reduced by turning and becoming a snitch. But that's the small stuff, right? Where this guy who owned this company that leaked this chemical into the water supply of West Virginia, where he really made his bucks. This is from the Gazette. And the Charleston Gazette in West Virginia. And I quote, Kennedy, this is the guy who's the co-founder of the chemical company, filed for bankruptcy in 2005 after he was charged with tax evasion and willful failure to pay employees withholdings to the government. Now, let me translate that. When, as an employer, you are required to deduct money from your employees' paychecks, and you do it every paycheck, you know, every week or every other week or every month, however it's paid, and then on a periodic basis, and it depends on the company and the amounts and how they do it, but you know, I believe that it's typically quarterly. But it's been a lot of years since I actually did. It's been actually a couple of decades since I did payroll myself. So I don't know exactly how often it has to be delivered to the government. But periodically, you then take that money, which is sitting in your checking account, and it's probably monthly by now. It might even be immediate. Who knows? And you write a check to the government and say, okay, here's the money that I withheld from my employees' paychecks. Here you go. Well, this guy took more than $1 million between 2000 and 2003 while he was the accountant for Freedom Industries. This very company. Quote, he admitted, this is from the Charleston Gazette, he admitted that between 2000 and 2003, while he was the accountant for Freedom Industries, Poca Blending, and New River Chemical Company, so he was the accountant for three companies, He was the co-founder of Freedom Industries. He withheld more than $1 million from employee paychecks that he never passed on to the federal government, according to court filings. He also owed more than $200,000 in state taxes. Carl L. Kennedy II took steps to conceal a large portion of his income from the Internal Revenue Service, using corporate funds for his personal benefit and writing corporate checks to cash for his personal enrichment. So, you know, this Freedom Industries, really. So here you have this guy who is a twice convicted felon in the chemical business, handling chemicals that, you know, we really just don't need to check on. The industry will police itself. After all, the Tea Party tells us these government regulations are strangling business. And so this place had not been visited in many, many years. And meanwhile, this 4-MCHM, methocyclohexane, methanol, which is used to wash coal, by the way, interestingly enough, gets into the water supply in West Virginia. Libertarians must just be so, you know, here's now we get to see how a libertarian system works. This is not apparently a regulated system. These tanks were not regularly inspected. And the marketplace will decide, right? Companies will simply decide, yeah, I don't think I want to buy from him anymore because he's got a bad reputation, because he didn't run his business well, because he polluted a watershed. You really think the coal companies, if this guy says, hey, you know, we're going to have a sale on 4-MCHM. We're going to have a sale on 4-HCMM, 4-HMCHM, and I'm going to sell it at 30% off. Really think the coal companies are going to follow this libertarian theory and say, you know, we're not going to buy from him because he has a bad reputation, when they can make more money? But, you know, this is what small government looks like. West Virginia is like the epicenter of small government. There's, you know, no functional tax base. The major industry is coal, and coal has basically bought most of the politicians to the point that they're relatively unregulated and pay very little in taxes relative to certainly other countries. Alaska doesn't, excuse me, West Virginia does not have what Alaska has, you know, a permanent fund. Alaska said, you know, we've got this natural resource, oil. We got a whole bunch of oil, and we own it. We're Alaska. We got this oil. And when we sell it to the oil companies, we're going to take that money and put it in a multi-billion-dollar fund and then take the interest out of that fund and every year send a check for $2,000 to every citizen of the state of Alaska. And they've been doing this for decades. West Virginia could have done this with coal starting 100 years ago. But they never did, because that would be socialist. That would not be libertarian. I mean, maybe some libertarian would like to call and explain to me how libertarianism would deal with this situation. Got any suggestions?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Meanwhile, the Republicans in Congress are saying that unemployed people who are, cut off their unemployment benefits, genuinely hungry, more likely to get a job. And welcome back. Let me find my mouse here and put Andrew on the line, the senior producer of The Big Picture, Andrew Campbell. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Should Freedom Industries get the death penalty?
Yeah, Freedom Industries is behind the devastating chemical spill in West Virginia. There's still some 300,000 West Virginians without water right now as a result of it. And new information has come out to show that the state government ignored a plan for tougher chemical oversight, which would possibly have prevented this. And this is something we're seeing across the country, that the lack of regulations, I mean, it's a libertarian's dream, but the lack of regulations at factories and chemical plants is really causing some serious environmental disasters.
Yeah, and human disasters.
Human disasters, too. Luckily, no one was killed in this, but,
So far.
So far, and there could be residual chemicals in the water for who knows how long that could play severe consequences on people's health. So.
Yeah, it's really, really quite remarkable. And then in Block B, in our second block, we're going to talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, the fast track. This bill was dropped last week, the same day that the Chris Christie story hit big, and which I'm sure caused a lot of members of Congress to go, whew, maybe we can sneak this thing through.
Yeah, it was a bill that was put forth. It was called the Bipartisan Trade Priorities Act of 2014, sponsored by Senators Max Baucus and Orrin Hatch and Congressman Dave Camp. And one of the things it allows for is the fast tracking of TPP, which is something we've been talking about for months now, and it looks like it's finally going to become a reality. And we're going to be, unfortunately, we may have to deal with another one of these so-called free trade deals that sends thousands of jobs overseas and does absolutely nothing to help our economy, to help put Americans back to work.
Is the word bipartisan really the first word of the bill?
Yeah, it's in there. Yep.
It's part of the actual title of the bill, the bipartisan.
Yes.
That's really interesting, because in the House of Representatives, Dave Camp is a Republican. They've got two senators, a Democrat and a Republican. Max Baucus is a Democrat, and who's the other sponsor in the Senate?
Orrin Hatch.
Orrin Hatch, he's a Republican.
Yep.
But in the House, they couldn't get a Democrat to co-sponsor this.
Nope, but they still threw it in there. Amazing.
That is that's very, very interesting. That hopefully is good news. We'll see.
Regardless, we'll have Congressman Mark Pocan on to talk about it. He's obviously been an outspoken critic of TPP.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to get his thoughts.
Great. And then we're going to get into factory farms and this whole thing of antibiotics ceasing to work, basically.
Yeah, factory farms are the largest consumer of antibiotics in the world. Not humans, not doctors, factory farms. And it's just really amazing to think of what's going into our bodies. Really frightening, but it looks like it may be coming to an end soon, which would be a great thing.
Yeah, well, it's already come to an end in Europe. They just require that the farms be clean. In Europe, the average, the rate of foodborne illness is 0.0004%, less than 1%.
Right.
In the United States, it's 15%. 15% of all Americans get sick from foodborne illness at least once a year. That's mind-boggling.
It really is.
Absolutely mind-boggling. And in Europe, they don't use the antibiotics. Here we do. We've got filthy conditions with antibiotics. They have clean factory farms there, and they feed their animals well. Andrew Campbell, the Big Picture, senior producer of the Big Picture. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Tom.
Good to see you. We'll be back. Here with you, and Middleton in Ona, West Virginia. You are near the spill, Middleton?
Good afternoon, Tom. This is Middleton. It's been a while since I called you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I live about 20 miles away from where the affected area is, far as where people are doing with that water.
Uh-huh.
And the guy you just had on there, and he was talking about the inspection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he has got his wires crossed or what, but I was listening to the governor, and he says there is no EPA regulation on above-ground storage.
Really?
They post inspect that all the time. If it's underground, yes, there's regulation. So he's going to check into that and get that fixed, and the Republicans are going to really hound him for that because he's a Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's very... very interesting. So your Democratic governor said I'm going to have to check that out. Middleton, thank you for the heads up on that.
There's nothing. North Carolina, he's a Republican, right, the governor?
Yeah.
And he did away with all the weight limits so them trucks can get all that water in there. That's unbelievable.
Whoa. So the roads are going to get ripped up. And
So then you don't get, you know, they'll have to worry about, you know, being 40 pounds on a trailer.
Right, right. So the net of this is that Freedom Industries makes a mistake, and there's an enormous cost to the commons, like the roads. And who's going to pay for it? All of us.
Yeah, you know, I listened to the guy that you was talking about. You know, Channel 3 News had him on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And
Carl
all he
Kennedy.
Could do was stand there and stutter, and have a decent conversation. With what we kept wanting to walk off, you know, it was a joke just to listen to him.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, Middleton, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the heads up from West Virginia. I appreciate it. Rocky in Etowah, Tennessee. Hey, Rocky, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Okay, this is what I want to say. You know, the media is making a big deal about this spill, and they've been tearing up that mountain up there in West Virginia for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is bad to spill, but what I'm getting at is, I'm relating this to the fracking.
Mm-hmm.
We are tearing up the environment through fracking so irresponsibly. Ken Burns did a documentary called The Dust Bowl, and the way the farmers went up there and stripped all the topsoil out.
Yep.
And for, you know, like 10 years, everything was a boom. Like there's a big boom right now called this fracking. But we couldn't tear up the environment more than we tried to drill all these holes in the ground. In 20 years, we're going to have the biggest environmental disaster you've ever seen.
I agree.
We'll make this still look small.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
as these fracking
is not connecting the dots.
Yeah, as these fracking chemicals begin to contaminate all of our underground water supplies. I think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Rocky, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, Daniel. And Philippi, West Virginia? Do I have that right, Daniel?
Yes, it's close enough, Philippi.
Philippi, okay. So what's up?
Well, Tom, I wanted to express appreciation for you talking about the spill in the southern part of the state. A lot of other places aren't going near that. And I wanted to say that it's living here in West Virginia about 90% of my life. It's the opinion of most people in West Virginia that the we depend on the coal companies for so much, for our jobs. I know my dad and my dad's dad worked for the coal mines most of their life. But the simple fact is that it's those coal mines that depend on West Virginians and not the other way around. The whole rest of the world is beginning to rely on other sources of power. And if the people, all of the people from the top to the bottom, don't realize that these companies depend on us and start changing their practices, that's not going to have people that are healthy enough to work for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they burn through people pretty fast. I mean, that's always been the Republican / libertarian business model, is, you know, just, you know, people get black lung disease. Well, next, you know, the old guys can't do it anymore.
For the Department of Disability Determination Services, they don't want to say anybody ever had any black lung.
Yeah.
Thousands of people they go through that could qualify, and they depend on that money from the companies.
Yeah.
What are the companies doing with all of that massive amount of money? Nobody needs that much money.
Yeah.
We need each other.
Yeah. They for some reason, the richer people are, the more they think they need more money. It's bizarre. Daniel, thanks for the call. Great observations, and thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Sure enough. Thanks a lot for listening to us there in West Virginia. Frank in Cambridge, Mass. Hey, Frank.
Hello. I think you should. There are a number of things you just brought up. It piqued my anger. Is one thing is you want to start an award called the Big Christie Award.
Okay.
And that is a bonehead type of thing between. You know, for how, and answers the question, how stupid and arrogant can you be? And the award would be the bonehead and a big 2-foot hoagie sandwich. It's becoming more and more obvious that he was involved with this thing. But the premise is they're inflicting pain on the people that they govern.
That's right.
And that's what is going on with this water supply thing. and can't, I just saw a complete, it dawned on me all of a sudden, the idea of crisis capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
You create a crisis, and then you have the solution. Now, they have the solution for purifying water. They've done this in city over city in the United States, you know, taking over the water supply system and then selling it back to the people. In Massachusetts.
Right. You're talking about the privatization of water supplies.
Privatization.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if this leads to... I don't know if this West Virginia company that's supplying water to these 300,000 people is a privately held or is a publicly held company. I just don't know, Frank. Do you, off the top of your head, for sure?
No, I just think that...
You don't know. Okay. We need to track that down. Frank, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So a twice-convicted felon running a chemical company in an unregulated environment? What could go wrong? No, people in Colorado are not using food stamps to buy pot. You can't do that. That's amazing. Days after Colorado began, this Josh Israel writing over at the Think Progress blog, days after Colorado began to allow recreational marijuana businesses, a group of state legislators has filed a bill to ensure that no food stamps or public assistance funds are used at those shops. Well, they're not. Anyway, above ground storage tanks. The EPA actually has a page on their website over at epa.gov. Followed by so many long letters and characters that... Anyhow, the question says, are above-ground storage tanks, ASTs, a way to avoid regulation? And the EPA says no. But some above-ground storage tank owners or operators mistakenly think they can avoid environmental and safety regulations by changing to above-ground storage tanks, ASTs. However, ASTs are subject to both federal regulations and state local regulations. Before choosing an AST option, UST owners, that's underground storage tank, owners and operators should keep the following in mind. And then basically, they have three things. Number one, that you've got to close down your UST properly, because underground storage tanks are actually inspected by the EPA. Above ground storage tanks are not. Number two, you do have to meet the EPA's spill prevention control and countermeasure requirements, SPCC requirements. This is 40 CFR Part 112. That's the law. Although I have no idea how rigorous that law is. And when you've got a guy running the company who took $1 million from his employees and said, I'm deducting this from your pay and giving it to the government as taxes, and then those employees, you know, the IRS is going to come after the employees. You made $30,000 last year, and you had $3,000 withheld from your paycheck, and we never got it. And the employee's going to go, well, I gave it to Carl Kennedy. I gave it to the company. I gave it to Freedom Industries. And the IRS will say, well, they didn't give it to us, so you can give it to us, I think. Maybe you get a free pass in a case like that. I don't know. But in any case, it's not good. So what's this guy doing out running around loose? Anyway, some ASTs may meet or need additional state or local regulatory requirements. So basically, you know, it's up to the state. So, poisonous chemicals, let's put them in West Virginia. Carl in Elgin, Illinois. Hey, Carl.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was just doing some research yesterday online, and, you know, not that everything online is up and accurate, but, you know, I've found several stories that points Freedom Industries being backed by the Koch brothers.
Which, I didn't...
Was started by... I'm sorry?
Well, go ahead. Let me hear
you. It looks like it was initially funded by, the Koch brothers and their paper company, Georgia Pacific.
What I read was that
these guys that are in the in the mix of it. This Kennedy and the other guy's name is Southern, Gary Southern.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them then can't be reached, and they've got all these shadow offices that, you know, nobody answers the phones at or anything.
Sure. Well, given what's going on, you can understand why a company might not want to be answering the phone. But the story that I read was that Koch Industries manufactures, well, in fact, actually, I'll just, this was published in the Gazette, the Charleston Gazette, West Virginia, the hometown paper, as it were. And they say, in 2008, Freedom Industries secured a contract to distribute a line of products called Talon that are used as a binder in coal processing, according to a news release issued at the time. Freedom distributed Talon to 8 states, including West Virginia. Joshua Herzig, a Freedom executive, said in a press release, "We are excited to offer our customers inventive products like Talon, etc." And then they note, Talon is made by Georgia-Pacific Chemicals, LLC, which is owned by the billionaire industrialists Charles and David Koch. That's a very different thing than saying that the Koch brothers had anything to do with this or involved with it or anything like that. I think that that's...
Well, these two guys that are in charge of the company, according to one of the stories that I was reading, they were college buddies. And, you know...
Let's be careful here. The fact of the matter is that this whole libertarian theology that is promoted by the Koch brothers is one of less regulation. And that, I would argue, can lead to these kinds of situations. But I've not been able to find, and I think that if it was there, it would be a little more conspicuous, Carl. I'm not willing to condemn somebody for being college buddies. I've not been able to find any direct connection. Thanks for the, college try there, Carl. Leon in Maroa, Illinois. Hey, Leon, what's up?
Right. Nice to talk to you, Tom. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling.
I was told years ago that there's only so many drops of water on this clean earth.
Yeah.
And I just wondered which one of the Koch brothers is going to be fighting one another for the last clean glass of water.
Oh, come on. Here's the thing. You know, it's so easy to villainize, and they do it on the left, with George Soros. It's so easy to villainize an individual because that individual has been bankrolling his own particular philosophy or his own particular politicians or whatever, or in the case of the Koch brothers, two individuals. But I think that what we need to acknowledge is that the problem is not the Koch brothers or Shelley Adelson or George Soros or any other billionaire. The problem is that our Supreme Court has said that money in politics is protected by the First Amendment under the rubric of speech. It's money is the same thing as speech, and the First Amendment protects speech. And this is a crazy idea. It's a wrong idea. We need to amend the Constitution to reverse it out so that the Koch brothers and George Soros equally can no longer influence politics in the way that they can now. And it's not monarchy. Aristocracy? What's the form of government where it's, government by the rich? Bernie talks about it a lot. In any case, it'll come to me when I'm trying to think of it. But, Leon, it's a great joke, and thank you for calling and making it. But, I think that we need to look deeper. We need to look at the systemic problems. We need to amend the Constitution to say money is not speech, and corporations, and therefore is not protected under the First Amendment, and corporations are not people, and therefore they're not protected by the 14th Amendment. James in Reno, Nevada. Hey, James.
Yes, good day, Mr. Tom. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. And what I wanted to speak to you about is when the last president was standing for the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this very clearly because I worked at a company where the EPA came in and made our company change its effluent leaving the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Jimmy Carter.
Hmm.
And ever since the end of Jimmy Carter, that was the beginning of the end of the EPA.
In other words, it all started with
Oregon. Is there any EPA? I mean, like, how many people work for the EPA and are out around the United States checking on what the EPA is supposed to check on?
Not enough.
It has not been shut down.
Yeah, not enough, I would say. Whatever the answer is not enough. James, thanks a lot for the call. Excellent point. Excellent point. James in Orlando, West Virginia. Hey, James.
Hello, Mr. Thornton. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for a free speech TV. At least you tell the truth about a lot of stuff that these other stations are hiding. I lived in West Virginia my whole life. I'm 67 years old. And when I was a child, for a long time, we drank out of the spring that ran out of the mountain back of our home. Mm-hmm. And the waters was clean. Now, they did have deep mining, but that was mostly, you know, the sludge piles that you hear so much about. That's where they put their sludge. And we mostly had our own drinking water wells at our home. We had the old hand pump, you know, that you pumped it up. Well, as years went by, they started putting water lines in, and we wondered why we were going to get drinking water out of the Elk River, which is over 60 miles from the Logan Boone County border.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the shadows of Blair Mountain, where they, you know, where the county and
right.
the Union fought the county.
Yeah.
And then the big strip jobs started coming in, and massive stripping. Well, when they did that, that ruined our drinking water, and then we seen, well, the coal companies are going to strip all the mountains down around us, so that was the only way to get drinking water in, was to bring it 60 miles away into us.
Thus, you've got a for-profit water company now that's supplying water to 300,000 people.
That's correct. Well, they're supplying all of Charleston and everything in each direction for 60 miles. So, yeah, you got 300,000 people easy.
Yeah.
And when I was a child, when you went to Charleston, West Virginia, the chemical factories over there, they're just the smoke coming out of them.
Yeah.
Killed the trees along the hill, the top of the mountain.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, and the EPA took care of that. James, I'm sorry we're out of time. Thank you very much for the call and for a great story. A great story. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Oligarchy. Is that oligarchy? Yeah, it's close. It's close. Oh, yeah, they're oligarchs. Welcome back. Yeah, the billionaires are oligarchs. It's an oligarchy. That's it. That's right. We got to come up with a better word, you know. I don't know what, but. Anyhow, Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you for
thanks
watching
for taking
Free
Speech. Call.
Sure. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Before I start, say what I wanted to, I wanted to ask, who lives downstream? Remember that phrase, who lives downstream?
Yeah.
Where's this stuff going?
Yeah.
But there are four bills. I don't know if they have been passed or not. One is the agricultural bill. It has a clause that eliminates the EPA, this is out of North Carolina, from inspecting runoff. The new clean energy bill eliminates the EPA's right to regulate runoff. The Army Corps of Engineer bill that will move the Army Corps of Engineer from the executive branch to the legislative branch also restricts their ability and their right to inspect how land is cleared and altered to increase the size of dams and locks on the rivers.
Wow.
The fourth bill, which was debated on Thursday, has to do with the Superfund Hazardous Waste Act, moving it from a federal agency to each state's own problem.
Wow.
This is a problem here in Alabama because we're 49th in environmental health.
Right.
But you put all of these bills together, and there is no reason to have an EPA. There's no reason to provide them with funding.
So these are pieces of federal legislation that are sitting in the House of Representatives right now?
Yes.
Wow.
And you put them all together like a jigsaw puzzle, and it eliminates EPA. This gives every type of corporation, like the fertilizer plant that blew up in Texas, remember that?
Sure, yeah.
All of these train wrecks
in West Texas
that dump oil.
Yep.
This becomes the state's problem. these no longer will come under federal regulations.
And many states don't have enough revenue to really do anything about it. Well,
here in Alabama, they don't care at all.
Yeah, or they'll simply lower their standards to the point where, you know, to attract industry, right, in quotes,
yeah.
to bring jobs.
Water comes out of North Georgia, where that paper plant is.
Wow.
And it comes straight down the Coosa River.
Yeah.
And our water plant here is owned by a private company in New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, how did you find out about these four pieces of legislation?
I'm a disabled retired woman sitting here watching TV and watching you, watching C-SPAN, watching C-SPAN 2. And I go to the library because I don't have the internet. I go to the library and I look stuff up. But I also go and sit in our house. Our house starts tomorrow. And once again, we're not going to have the ACA. We're not going to be allowed to vote on a lottery, even though every state around us has gambling. We have Federal Creek Indian casinos.
Right.
And like you said, our state was one of the states trying to get Boeing, and now our governor's mad at him. He said they used us. But nobody really stops and thinks about the long-term effect of adding these legislations together.
Right.
If you how much is it going to cost us to straighten the Mississippi so that you can put a large cargo ship up it to these coal mines in West Virginia, which is the whole point of moving the Army Corps of Engineers from executive to public-private under legislation. Do you really want a large cargo ship trying to make the turn past the Missouri?
That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing stuff. Norma, thank you for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. I'm telling you, you've got the smartest viewers in the world. Thank you for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Cisco in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Cisco, what's up?
Good day, Mr. Hartman.
Good day.
First time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
Remember the song, I Left My Soul to the Company Store?
Yeah, I remember when Tennessee Ernie Ford sang it back in the late 50s, I think it was.
It's the people of West Virginia that allow this. They compromise their state for these kinds of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my comment for the day, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Cisco. Great to hear from you. And thanks for listening to 1310 AM there in Albuquerque. Frank in Minneapolis. Say, Frank, what's up?
Hi, Tom. One thing I don't hear on the news, on the mainstream media,
mm-hmm.
Camp Lejeune. My sister has stage 4 cancer from Camp Lejeune.
Camp Lejeune?
Fracking, all this stuff is, what?
Well, hang on just a second. What's the association between Camp Lejeune? First of all, where is Camp Lejeune?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. That's the military base there in North Carolina. And what's the association between that and your sister's cancer?
It's stage 4 cancer from that.
But how do you know that it's from the military base?
Well, that's what they say. But they just passed a law that says anyone that was there or children that were born there get VA benefits. They're not denying it.
Oh, really?
Yes. But you don't hear that in mainstream media. I mean, she's just going through it. She's just going through it now with the lawyers and stuff. And oh, it's a very big deal. They've been polluting it since 1950.
They've been polluting the.
On it, and I heard the military say, "Well, it will be hard for us to notify everybody that was there." Baloney.
Yeah.
It's hard for our military to notify the people that were there.
Yeah, yeah. What were they? Were they contaminating the water, or the air, or the ground, or all of the above?
Water. Gas tanks. It's been benzene, I think it is.
Right.
That was leaking from the gas tanks and stuff.
Yeah.
Since 1950s.
Yeah, and benzene is a carcinogen.
I'm surprised you didn't hear about that, Tom.
I am too. I don't know.
Oh yeah, it ain't even broke loose yet. But this is a very big thing. This ain't just a frivolous lawsuit. Somebody's trying to get our government. She lived there for 3 years. They say if you lived and used the water for 30 days, you can get the cancer.
Wow.
So, you know, maybe I'd appreciate if maybe we try to get this out there more.
Yeah. Well, I think you just did.
All right, that's all I got to say.
Okay.
As far as I called you about civil disobedience, I went out to Wisconsin when Walker was doing his stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I got a little loud and tried to rile things up, and they called me a thug. Laws are, you know, like you were talking about the laws.
Right.
You know, I'm a union laborer. I've been bannering non-union jobs, and our lawyers from the union tell us we got to go to the other side of the neighborhood to banner so people don't think we're striking that job. Laws are made against the small people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you know, in this era since the 70s when the Supreme Court really started aggressively, well, when Lewis Powell was put on the court and the court started aggressively saying in the Buckley decision and the First National Bank decision and then Citizens United that money is protected under the First Amendment as speech, you are seeing more and more that our laws are being bought and paid for by big companies, and they're not for the little guy, they're for the big guys. You're absolutely right. Thanks a lot, Frank. Wade in Sewell, New Jersey. Hey, Wade, what's up? Wade, you're on the air. Wade is...
Hi Tom.
Yeah.
How are you?
Hi, Wade.
Thanks for having me on the air. Hi. I just want to let you know I'm a long-time listener, big fan of your show, love the show.
Thank you.
It's great to hear people actually talking about these things that everybody's talking about. I mean, this is a long systemic history of our country, just throwing toxins all over our country, letting big business do whatever we want, and we're now in another cycle again, where we were in the 30s, and again, I mean, speaking as someone from West Virginia, I'm actually from Huntington, you know, the state has a long history with the government, with outside influences coming in, taking the resources, doing very little for the people as far as economics or having hospitals or roads or,
right.
You know, and just leaving them in abject poverty. You know, and now that I live, I live on the East Coast, and people talk about two Americas, and, you know, why aren't our politicians recognizing what's happening? Why do they talk the talk? And I won't mention any names on the left, but they don't really do anything. And this is why, is because I believe, you know, it's a little too late for that. They know where we are. I can tell you West Virginia. We would go to the Capitol when I was a kid, you know, we'd get on the bus and go on a field trip, and there was a town called Nitro on the way to Charleston, West Virginia. Well, the reason they called the town Nitro is because if you're an 8-year-old kid and you're on a bus and you smell the toxic fumes, it burns your nose. So
wow.
It was a joke on the bus, and we were told, well, that's the reason, is because, you know, we're going through all of the chemical plants on the way to Charleston, and you can see them. They're right on the river.
Right.
And, you know, this is just, again, another example, another thing that I think we're fed up with, but
yeah.
You know, some people now have the impotence to do anything about it because, as you stated over and over on your program, corporations are people. They have more money than you. And apparently in our society, our culture dictates that, guess what? You don't have a voice.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And to know that, you know, my family and I, we live near these chemical plants, whether they be oil refineries, you know, processing pulp mills, all of these things went into the water stream, all of these things, and to let you know that basically most of the water companies are privately owned in the state because, believe it or not, the water is pretty much poison.
Yeah, well, that's what the caller said earlier, that he lived in West Virginia, and he used to just drink out of the stream coming out the backyard, and then they started doing the strip mining, and it ruined the streams. And so they had to bring in, you know, tap water, you know, piped
absolutely.
Water, and that
absolutely.
So that became a profit opportunity.
Bathing in bottled water, people are, you know, my first cousin actually died at the age of 24 of lymphoma.
Yeah.
You know, why we don't know. No one would tell us why. But you know, now looking back at these disasters and looking at what we've done to our country as far as the environment. We have to take an account. You may not see it. You may not smell it, but it's there.
Yeah, yeah, and it's all over. Wade, thanks a lot for the call. These are the arguments against the Republican/libertarian view of government as, you know, shouldn't be there, shouldn't do anything.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at solarworld.com, carbonite.com, automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at carbonite.com, angieslist.com, detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at angieslist.com, stamps.com, postage online from your computer. More information at stamps.com, and our website, tomhartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at tomhartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, and Rich Danker is on the line with us. He is the Economics Director for American Principles in Action, APIA, the co-author of the report Building a Winning GOP Coalition, The Lessons of 2012, and the website is AmericanPrinciplesInAction.org, all spelled out just like that. Rich, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. You are making the argument that unemployment benefit extensions are bad things. Do I have that right?
That's right. I think they've been extended, obviously, several times the last few years, and I think they're a understandable and sympathetic reaction to what happened in the economic crash, but they've been a bad thing for the unemployment situation as it's panned out, yeah.
How is it that unemployment benefits cause unemployment?
Well, for one, they discourage the job-seeking process from happening. They sort of inhibit it.
So people are more likely to look for a job if they don't have the money for gas and if they're hungry.
They're less likely to look for a job if a good chunk of their income is being replaced for 2 years or so, yeah. And they're less likely to move to where the jobs are. And that's a problem we've seen because there's a lot of disparity in state economies over employment prospects.
Well, I read the study that you cited, and you know, much of the math in it is over my head, but the essence of it seemed to be that when people lose their unemployment benefits, then they are sufficiently desperate to take jobs that they wouldn't have otherwise taken. In other words, you've got somebody with a master's degree in electrical engineering, and they've been looking for any kind of job in electrical engineering or even around electricity for years and years and years, or for 2 years, and they haven't been able to find one, or for a year, actually for 26 weeks is, you know, federal unemployment benefits. And when their benefits run out, they say, oh, screw it, and they go to work at McDonald's for $7 or $8 an hour, and or 9 or 10 or whatever McDonald's pays. But, you know, they end up taking a job for which they're not qualified. I don't see how that's a good thing.
Well, the example is not always that extreme or usually that extreme.
Well, that was the rationale for the entire study. It's right there in the first three paragraphs.
And I agree with it. And you're proving the point that when the benefits do run out, they are likely to encourage employment and hiring, even if it's in a different industry or a level below what the person had started off or been laid off from in the economic crash.
But shouldn't we instead be talking about policies that will bring jobs back home, like, you know, going back to the pre-Clinton era, the pre-Reagan era, when we actually had tariffs that protected our domestic industries, abandoning these so-called free trade agreements, taking our minimum wage back up to, you know, $10.10 an hour where it was in 1968, that kind of stuff. I mean, isn't this the simple, straightforward stuff rather than saying to people, I'm sorry, the system's screwed up, we're not going to bother with that, and by the way, you're out of luck. And so what? You got $60,000 in college loans, and you've got a master's degree in electrical engineering. You're going to have to flip burgers for the rest of your life.
Well, we could forgive student loan debt and bankruptcy. That might be one thing we can agree on. But if you do want to go back to the pre-Clinton era and give up NAFTA to go back to the Reagan years, I'm with you on that. I'll go back to those tax levels because I think that they resulted in more job gains and a better economy. I mean, Europe created no net jobs in that 80s, 90s economic boom. And meanwhile, you know, the U.S. economy had one of its best runs in history.
Oh, yeah. So. Reagan tripled the national debt. I mean, spending debt-based federal spending, you know, he massively increased the size of government. And particularly with Star Wars, that was $1 trillion just in and of itself. You can really stimulate an economy that way. You know, I mean, keep in mind, Reagan also had the biggest crash since 1929 during his presidency, and it was just after his tax cuts. And so then it kicked in with the stimulus spending.
Hardly anybody lost their jobs when the market crashed in 87, unlike in 2008.
So yeah, well, that's because it came back, because he was spending money like crazy, and Congress was right there with him doing it. And now, when the president tries to spend money, Congress says no. In fact, we're going to cut the amount of money that you're spending.
I think it's about the return on investment in public spending, right? So when Reagan did it, it was in the Cold War, and whether you agreed or not, you saw that that was the purpose. Now, when Obama does it, I think we don't really understand what the point is. I mean, the stimulus, for instance, did that do much to decrease the employment?
Yes, we went from losing 700,000 jobs a month to making roughly 100,000 jobs a month, and some months more, some months less. But that's been probably the neighborhood of the average for about the last 3.5 years.
And it's the slowest recovery really in modern times, and it's
because Republican governors have laid off over 600,000 people. Because,
well, if you look at the public sector firings, I mean, layoffs, they've been a really small chunk of the unemployment rate. I mean, there's news media's, you know, crunched those numbers.
Yeah, my point. So why don't we go back to a rational trade policy that brings our jobs home? Why don't, you know, Nancy Pelosi, she got it passed out of the House of Representatives, a bill that said we are no longer going to give tax breaks, tax incentives to companies to close down factories in the United States and ship them over to China and rebuild them in China. We're no longer going to finance that. And in fact, we will finance by virtue of tax breaks companies that want to close factories in China and move them back to the United States. And that was filibustered by Republicans in the Senate. Why?
Well, they believe in free trade, and I think they would love to see those jobs.
I don't think they believe in free trade. I think they did it because they knew that it would have stimulated the economy, and they do not want this president to have a decent legacy. They want history to look back on President Obama as, oh, he was that president during the 8 years when America did not work.
Well, I mean, that's their.
I think they're willing to. They are willing to destroy the middle class and destroy people's lives in order to tarnish his reputation.
I'll certainly admit it sounds like that sometimes, but the problem is both parties are really out of ideas about how to reignite the economy.
Democrats have a whole bunch of ideas. I mean, there were 236 pieces of legislation that Nancy Pelosi passed during the 2 years that she was Speaker of the House in the first 2 years, that every single one of which was filibustered by Republicans in the Senate and never got made into law, that would have created jobs in the United States. That one about trade is one of the most conspicuous. But there's a whole bunch of others. And you were talking about return on investment, and I think this is really a big deal. Reagan's $1 trillion investment in Star Wars, when you put money into military projects, you don't get a return. You build a bomb and drop it on somebody, that money's gone. If you take if you take that same $1 trillion that Reagan spent on Star Wars and instead spend it on building schools or hospitals or bridges or roads or high-speed rail, it will provide the soil in which business can grow for generations.
Well, it's only worth it if we really need those things. And do we need high-speed rail? Is that more efficient out in California than actually driving between two cities?
I encourage you to visit Europe and try high-speed rail. You know, cross France. France is probably about the same number of square miles as California. It's not as long, but it's a lot wider. On their high-speed rail, you know, going 240 miles an hour. It's amazing, and you can. You know, walk with a glass, with a wine glass in your hand, no problem.
I prefer EasyJet, but you know, it's another debate. You can be anywhere in an hour in Europe on a plane. You don't really need high speed rail.
You can't be anywhere in Europe in an hour. You can be in any major city, but with high speed rail and with rail, you can be anywhere, literally anywhere, or at least any town over 15 or 20,000 people. But my point is that when you invest in infrastructure, you actually get a return on that investment. You invest $1 billion, you get back tens of billions of dollars in taxes over the next few decades. Whereas when you invest in Star Wars, you get back nothing. So
as long as you pick the right infrastructure.
Yeah. Well,
not the 261 things Pelosi wants to do, but some of those of those might be right.
Rich Danker, the website AmericanPrinciplesInAction.org. Rich, thanks for dropping by.
Okay, Tom. Thanks for having me.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do we do about unemployment? And do unemployment benefits actually cause people to not look for work? I don't think so. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see here. Bonnie in New Baltimore, Michigan. Hey, Bonnie. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, Tom. What was the fellow's name? It was just on Dan or
Rich.
Rich, sorry.
Rich Danker.
He's obviously not unemployed, and he doesn't look like he's in need of any money, or he'll be unemployed any short time because everything he says is hogwash. But really, the reason I called, I thought you'd just enjoy this. This is the New World Dictionary on oligarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was trying to.
Oligarchy is the word I was looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you said, I wish there was a better word, you know, but there isn't. But I just thought you'd get a kick out of this. You know, it says it's a form of government in which the ruling power belongs to a few persons, a state governed in this way, or the persons ruling such a state. And then it says, look up oligo. And this is the part I went, yes. A small destruction, death, wretched, an illness, scant, small, a deficiency, and I just thought, that isn't that the truth?
Wow, that's,
you,
the,
when that
that's the consequence of our oligarchy.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, this is what's happening with our country, and I don't know, we talk about grassroots, and grassroots would certainly help. But it's so difficult to get the grassroots organized. You can't believe it, especially now people are out looking for jobs.
Right.
These people, most of the people I know that are unemployed are looking for jobs. They don't want to be on unemployment. They hate it.
I have never known anybody who...
And they want more money. They want to go back. And they're all you hear is, and where's the job? So we should all move to China or Mexico, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's there was a time, I mean, when Jimmy Carter was president, the unemployment rate was 3.6%. If people want to be on unemployment benefits, why was the unemployment rate not 7 or 8%? Why didn't people just say, I quit, I'll take the benefits? You know, people would rather work. If there's work, people will take it. That's
right. Well, I'll tell you what. In December, I celebrated 25 years of owning my own business. I'm a bookkeeping accounting. And I had, at one point, just me, 31 clients. In the last 6 years, now I didn't have 31 6 years ago. I was down to maybe 25 or 20. But in the last 6 years, it put me down to this depression we're going through. I have 5 clients left.
Wow.
Because my clients either couldn't afford to pay me and keep me, and of the ones I lost, most of them closed their businesses. I just do corporations, not personal.
Right.
And I do corporate taxes all the way through.
Right.
And so there we go.
So you're seeing the destruction of the business infrastructure that supports the middle class here in America. Bonnie, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in New Baltimore. It's great to hear from you. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. One of the most vivid memories of my childhood is I was probably 7, 8 years old, thereabouts, and my family, my parents, my dad, well, and my mom, both of them, they were collectors. They collected books. My mom collected buttons and postcards, and and Dad mostly collected books. And we would go to, every weekend, we would go for these long, long drives all around central Michigan, and we would hit every secondhand store, all the Salvation Armies and the secondhand store. I knew them all, right? Every one within a 100-mile radius of Lansing. And, you know, look for buttons and postcards and books that they wanted to add to their collection. And then we'd drive home when the sun went down and, you know, go home and Mom would make dinner, and that's how we'd spend a Saturday. And I remember one night we were driving home and there was a big commotion on the road. It was in a rural area and we were on one of these 2-lane, 50-mile-an-hour, you know, kind of back roads, but, you know, with the occasional house along it, you know, in the farm country. And there was a house on fire. And the fire trucks were pulled up right on the yard, on the lawn, and there was a whole bunch of other cars around. And we slowed down as we went, but we had to slow down as we went by. Everybody was, you know, and there was a man who was, they had two firemen were holding this guy as he to keep him from running into this burning house, and he was screaming bloody murder. And he wanted to get into that house. And I never learned the story beyond just what I saw there. And my mom speculated that, you know, his kids or part of his family were inside that house. But I can still see that. It's just that. So anyhow, this is what poverty in America, this is what happens with the kind of poverty that we're experiencing right now as a result of the extreme inequality that we have in the United States. And Annie Rose Strasser, writing over at the Center for American Progress's blog, the Think Progress blog, you know that polar vortex where the global warming heated up the jet stream enough that it kind of got drunk and let a whole bunch of polar air spill down over North America? In Hammond, Indiana, there was a fellow by the name of Andre Young. And he and his wife and five kids were living in a rental house. And their electricity had been cut off since March. This is January. This happened a couple days ago. Their electricity had been cut off since March. Their gas had been cut off since April. And their water had been cut off since October. He worked he did yard work, and his wife had worked at the local Walmart, but she was with the youngins, she was at home. She was being a stay-at-home mom, and they, or who knows? I mean, we don't know the details of their story, other than this: that on that fateful night last week, I'm reading from Annie Rose Strasser's piece. The family was getting by on propane space heaters. They had no electricity and no gas, and no water. Authorities suspect that's what sparked a flame that engulfed the house around 10:30 p.m. on Wednesday. According to eyewitness accounts, Young ran into the house to try to rescue his five children inside. He successfully saved two, a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, before the flames caused serious injury and he collapsed into the snow. Another man tried to kick in the door and save the three children who remained inside, ages 4, 3, and 7 months, but the attempts were unsuccessful. When first responders arrived, they found the 3 and the 4-year-old holding on to one another just feet from the door. The 7-month-old was nearby. All three children were dead. Young remains hospitalized in critical condition. He works in lawn care, according to the Tribune. His wife worked at Walmart, but most recently was a stay-at-home mom. Presumably because of the 7-month-old, right? She just had a child. This is poverty. This is poverty in America. And the Republicans' answer? They don't need no food stamps. They don't need no LIHEAP. They don't need no heating help. They don't need any rental assistance. Yeah. You know, squeeze them a little harder, and then they'll take a job. What job? Well, I don't know, any job. What if there are no jobs? Well, they'll find a job. You know, if you squeeze them hard enough, they'll find a job. Really? But there's 7 people for every job. 7 people looking for every job that's out there. Well, you just squeeze them hard enough. You know, they can't afford to have their electricity anymore. They can't afford to have their heat and their gas anymore. They can't afford to have water anymore. You get polar cold, and the family's huddled around a propane space heater, and it catches a blanket on fire or something, and boom, everything goes down. Well, you know, should have had a job. I mean, do you get the callous, absolute lack of empathy that permeates the Republican Party today? I find it just breathtaking. Just horrifying. You know, Paul Ryan. Rand Paul. You know, if you pay people unemployment benefits more than 26 weeks, you're doing them a disservice. Right.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
There is a little bit of light in this, and this is a guy named Ron Unz. He's a multimillionaire in California. I'll tell you about him after the break. The bad and the very, very for just getly ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com. The good. Senate Democrats. A group of Democratic senators, including Barbara Boxer of California and Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, have formed what they're calling the Climate Action Task Force. A 12-member group plans to make a strong push for new climate change legislation by hosting floor speeches and holding public events to raise awareness about the dangers of global warming. It will also work with non-governmental organizations, including many religious groups and businesses, to get the word out about their efforts to stop global warming. Last time Senate Democrats made a big push for climate change legislation was with the cap-and-trade bill, and Republicans blocked it. With the House still in Republican hands, there's no guarantee that any legislation that passes the Senate will turn into law. Regardless of what Republicans do, though, the Climate Action Task Force is, without a doubt, a step in the right direction. We should all wish its members good luck. The bad. Britt Hume. During a panel discussion about the ongoing Bridgegate scandal on Sunday's episode of Spin Cycle, the Fox News host told Howard Kurtz that the whole narrative about Chris Christie being a bully is an example of today's feminized world. Check it out.
So what about this bully narrative?
Well, I would have to say that in this sort of feminized atmosphere in which we exist today, guys who were masculine and muscular like that in their private conduct and kind of old-fashioned tough guys run some risks.
Feminized?
feminized.
Atmosphere.
Yeah. I don't know if Britt's been watching the news lately, but the reason people think Chris Christie is a bully is not because they're afraid of macho men. They think he's a bully because his administration shut down traffic lanes on the George Washington Bridge in what appears to be an act of political retribution. All factual issues aside, though, the fact that Britt would use the term feminized as an insult is pretty disturbing. His fellow guests were right to be appalled. And the very, very ugly Bernard McGuirk. During a recent episode of the Fox Business News Mensa meeting, the radio producer said that the Satanists who wanted to build a statue of Satan outside a Kansas courthouse should be executed. Seriously, check it out.
you're making a moral equivalence between, say, Christianity, which promotes things good for the most part, and all other religions, and Satanism, which promotes evil.
Not a good role model.
And so they should be able to put the statue up, and then they should be shot right next to it, and then we take it down.
Lawyers for the Satanist group have demanded an apology, but as of yet, McGurk has yet to offer one. And what's more, Fox Business News hasn't even bothered to comment on the controversy, because, you know, casually calling for the death of religious minorities just isn't a big deal at all. That is very, very ugly. Okay, I promised I would tell you about this billionaire in California. His name is Ron Unz. He is a former Republican candidate for office. Republican. A conservative, a billionaire, and he's trying to get a referendum on the ballot for this fall that would propose a two-stage minimum wage hike, first to $10 an hour in 2015 and then to $12 an hour in 2016. He wants a $12 an hour minimum wage in California. Now, why would a conservative Republican want a $12 an hour minimum wage? Because if people make enough money that they're no longer below the poverty line, then they're no longer eligible for, and in theory no longer need, food stamps and public housing and other forms of public assistance and Medicaid and those kind of things. And he says, by ending the ability of corporations to use this low-wage model where you and I pay through our taxes to subsidize the workers of places like Walmart and McDonald's and whatnot, we pay for the benefits that they use. That by ending that, by raising the minimum wage, that he says it's going to save the government $1 trillion in 5 years, just in California. Won't cost the state a penny. And he says with a minimum of unemployed people. He says it further would be a huge stimulus and raising millions of workers out of poverty without requiring significant price increases for consumers. And then they did the polling on this. And 6 in 10 Republicans support the minimum wage being raised, according to a November Gallup poll. And compared to 76% of the full sample poll. So 76% of all Americans want to raise the minimum wage. 60% of Republicans do. I've said this to you before. I've said it to a number of conservatives I debated. This is the conservative argument for raising the minimum wage, is that it'll put an end to the business model of running a business, you know, every Walmart costing the taxpayers of the surrounding community $1 million because they're subsidizing the Walmart workers. Paying for their food stamps and things because they're not earning enough money. And the same thing with, you know, the fast food places and the big box places and whatnot. I mean, this business model of low-wage subsidized workers is like, it's crazy. And it's really only been around for about 15 or 20 years. It came out of the Clinton era, Clinton-Gingrich welfare reforms, ending welfare as we know it sort of stuff. So, anyhow, Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Tom, the government by the wealthy is plutocracy.
There you go.
From the word
oligarchy.
The Greek word plutos for wealth and democracy for democracy.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, thank you, Ed. I appreciate that. Steve in Haymarket, Virginia. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Yeah, used to be a coal stripper in West Virginia, and my dad went off to World War II, his draft, and he come back and wanted to get home 2 weeks early, so he signed up for the reserve, so that got him stint in Korea. So the point being that when he came back from Korea, that all the oil companies had bought the places where you dump the coal. And I don't understand in this situation why they're utilizing a expensive oil-produced chemical to wash coal. It just doesn't even make good sense.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't answer the question for you. I don't know. Janet in Gustine, California. Hey, Janet, what's up?
Yes, Tom, thank you. We use goods and services to generate money. And it appears to me that that's what's destroying the planet. I'm wondering why we cannot use conservation, restoring the planet, as a basis for generating money. Because I understand that 25% of the planet is in need of restoration.
Yeah, at least. We consume about half of all the fresh water that's available for species on planet Earth that's not locked up in the ice, which is an astounding number. And we consume a little more than half of all of what's called the net photosynthetic productivity, NPP, basically, you know, plant life on the planet. And I'm with you. And I think that, you know, stopping large-scale animal agriculture, changing the way that we eat, educating girls and women, particularly in third-world countries, so that instead of having 11 babies, they have one or two, because as education and political power go up, family size goes down, you know, some really simple things could have a huge, huge impact and would move us toward conservation. I'm with you, Janet. Thank you for the call. Very good one. Myron in Sharon, Pennsylvania. Hey, Myron.
Yes, thanks, Tom, for taking my call. Sure. I just wanted to bring something out to you that I've found out over the years. I've worked my mind just went.
Well, it says here I've worked in addictions for 40 years.
I've worked in addictions for 40 years. And in the beginning, I realized the common addictions, which was alcohol and drugs. And then it just kept growing, what people become addicted to. And I have finally come to the conclusion after all this time in this industry that the greatest of all addiction is greed, money.
An addiction to money.
Now,
I would add power to that. I think that the two are pretty intertwined.
Money. Yeah. That's the addiction. Those go hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hand in hand. And what it is, you know, if you're an alcoholic and you go out and get in trouble, wreck a car or hit somebody and kill somebody, you know, you're put in jail. But, you know, you steal all this money off of people, and what do? They pat you on the back. And it's not just these billionaires and multimillionaires, but it's our society over the past 50 years have been chasing the money tree themselves. I've been a part of that, too, in my life. Don't do it no more, but I did it.
Yeah.
Until we come to the realization of what causes our problems, we're not going to solve them other than we're going to have revolution. I hope that it would be in a peaceful way.
Yeah, I would hope so, too. Myron, thank you. I'm with you. I really do believe that a lot of these guys, these very wealthy people who are working so hard to keep tax rates low and against the estate tax and things like that, that they actually have obsessive compulsive disorder. They have hoarding syndrome. They have an addiction, and the object of their addiction is their wealth.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And then you look at guys, you know, like the CEOs of these health insurance companies who have 5, 6, 7 mansions, you know, all scattered around the world. And, you know, do you really need all that many? Welcome back. Clay in Cassville, Missouri. Hey, Clay, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Yes, I'm a bit off topic, I believe. And
that's all right.
I'm sorry. I got to mute the television.
Thank you.
I'm hearing myself talk to you in the background. On the Radcast numbers given,
mm-hmm.
I was trying to find out what the counts per minute. Is that a measurement of ionizing radiation?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the way the meters work is they've got a chamber of some kind that, you know, whenever ionizing radiation goes through it, it ionizes whatever's in that chamber. And at least the old-fashioned ones used to have a gas in them. I don't know how they do it nowadays. And you get a click out of it, right? And so one photon or one particle of ionizing radiation this is why there's no such thing as a safe level of radiation. You know, ionizing radiation hits DNA, and if it hits it in such a way that it knocks out the part that controls the replication of the cell, then you have cancer. And 99.999% of the time, it doesn't hit that part of the cell or even that part of the DNA, or it takes out something else, or it just causes the cell to not be able to live. But, very small. So the more frequently you're exposed to these beams, these rays, the higher the probability of cancers and other kinds of problems, but cancer is the worst. And so, you know, that's why there's no such thing as a safe level of ionizing radiation. But on the other hand, there is a certain natural background level of radiation.
So. Right. Yes, I'd considered an underground home years ago and found out the risk of radon gas.
That's right. That's right.
Filtration.
Yeah, then you'd be getting 30, 40, 50 counts per minute just of radon, you know, in a situation like that.
Yeah, we're lucky. The nearest nuclear generating stations are Russellville, Arkansas, and Fulton, Missouri, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said if they tried to build one in this area, I would see how well my understanding of the laws of admiralty applied. Being intentionally vague there.
I see. Okay. Well, the nuclear power plants are not a problem when they're operating properly. The problem is that, you know, they're designed for 30 years. What do you do with it after that? You know, it's all the guts of it are all radioactive now. What do you do with the waste? You've got the mining of the uranium, the processing of the uranium, the transportation of the uranium. And then the disposal of the radioactive byproducts is this whole fuel cycle that's all very expensive, and that, you know, nuclear power plants wouldn't exist if we didn't subsidize them through the Price-Anderson Act. There is no insurance company in the world that will insure a nuclear power plant against all risks. So we did it with Congress, which is crazy.
And if we hadn't wanted the materials, fissionable materials, for our war machine, we probably would have far fewer of them than we do.
Oh, yeah. There's an absolute relationship between nuclear power and nuclear bombs. Absolutely. Clay, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. I do appreciate it. We'll be right back. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's check in with Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Talk Radio News brought to you by the Goats for the Old Goat.com. Victoria, I see you are at the White House in the luxury Talk Radio News broom closet.
I am. Yes. Very exciting.
Indeed.
Very excited to be here.
So
today.
What's going on at the White House that has you there?
Well, we had a late briefing.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's a late briefing, you just stay on. You know, normally I would leave a little earlier, but I stay on because you serve at Jay Carney's pleasure.
I see. Did Jay Carney say anything of consequence, or should we go on to other news?
Talked a little bit about how counterproductive it would be for U.S. senators to enact Iran sanctions at this point with another 6-month deal having just been agreed to.
Yes.
As they move forward to try to get to a permanent deal with either 58 or 59 U.S. senators, depending on how you do your count, having signed on, and a lot of them Democratic senators, all in battleground districts, by the way, battleground states,
wow,
having signed on for the sanctions bill. It's getting to nearly the veto proof stage, even though President Obama in his statement last night said that he would veto it. He might not be able to.
Whoa, that would not be good.
Yeah.
It would be nice to resolve this with diplomacy instead of war.
Yeah. So it's getting really quite interesting. Just in the last few minutes, actually, we were de-embargoed over some Obamacare information. Mm-hmm. Kathleen Sebelius, the Health and Human Services Secretary,
said in response to releasing the demographic information about people signing up for insurance, we're pleased to see such a strong response and heavy demand. Well, what the information is that nearly 2.2 million people across the country signed up for individual coverage through December the 28th. Significant uptick in December after pretty lame numbers, actually, in October and November as people battled through technical problems with the website. About 55% of those people were between the ages of 55, were over 45. Mm-hmm. 33% between 55 and 64, 22% between 45 and 54. About 24% are between 18 and 34, which is the number that they want.
Yeah, that's great.
That's the percentage they want. I mean, they want those people, and they would like to have got more than that, I think. But what they're saying is that at this point they expect the sicker people and those who could not get insurance to be signing up, and, of course, they've got until the end of March to do that.
Right.
54% of those who've signed up are women, and 46% of those who've signed up are men. And the District of Columbia has the highest proportion of 26 to 34-year-olds among its enrollees, 37%.
Interesting.
And California is the winner among the states for the for having done the best with its coverage. But it's had a very good website.
Yeah, California did a very good, highly functional website.
Yeah, it's done very well throughout. Oregon, I suspect, is probably the fail, because I think its website probably, I think it's probably got about two.
Yeah, they had website problems. Huh?
Yeah, massive. I imagine you've had a Supreme Court report.
No, we haven't. And Shane is here. We talked about it before we went on the air, and I should have.
We had one.
So, You can give us a quick summary. I'm going to bring Shane on later.
Well, a majority of the Supreme Court justices sounded very skeptical about President Obama's labor board appointments today during arguments.
Right.
I mean, even Justice Breyer.
Well, this goes all the way back to Reagan or Carter, depending on which of the lawyers you're listening to, right?
Yes, pretty much. But they all sounded pretty much thinking the question of when is a recess, not a recess. They all seem to be buying into the line very much that, well, a recess is when the Senate says it is, not when you say it is.
Right.
So there's a strong sense in everything that I've read, all the reports that I've read, that that they're not going to find in favor of the government. Of course, you never know what they're going to do, but that's the sense that you get. But you'll get much more from Shane on this one.
Yeah. Okay.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said today he would only allow relevant Republican amendments to the unemployment extension bill, but he wouldn't entertain non-germane proposals, including those meant to attack Obamacare.
I was just thinking of Obamacare. They're going to try to. Okay.
And, in fact, one of the ones that does delay Obamacare for a year. So they're bogged down again, and this thing may or may not get a procedural vote tonight, or it may be delayed until tomorrow as the two sides battle it out. Even some Democrats feel that Harry Reid at this point is running a ship on his own with no input from anybody and not allowing amendments.
Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, the unemployment, extending unemployment benefits is pretty simple. Why not just do it?
Well, because if it was just this bill that he was not allowing amendments on, that might be one thing. But he's not allowing amendments on anything.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Why?
I'm not quite clear on why he's not allowing any amendments on anything. He would say it's because they never submit amendments, I think, that are relevant, and because they're always trying to slow things down.
Yeah, I figured it was the time thing that, you know.
Right, and in fact, he blamed Republicans today for delaying consideration of executive branch nominees,
saying Secretary of State John Kerry had asked Senate leaders to speed up the nomination process as one-third of Kerry's top political appointees are still not confirmed. And he got into a bit of a spat with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell over why nominations have been slowed. And McConnell said they've been slowed only because Senate Democrats last year decided to strip the GOP's right to filibuster nominations. So Republicans have any number of means of slowing down nominations.
That's
and they're doing so.
So they're slowing down the nominations by slowing down the entire Senate.
Yes.
Basically. Amazing. And thus Harry Reid is saying no amendments because we want to move stuff through fast. That makes a certain amount of sense. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goodsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great to see you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We have covered a lot today. We've talked about, you know, the horrors of poverty in the United States, these three children who died when their power was cut off, just as the, not just as, but, you know, it had been cut off some time before, but when the polar vortex hit Hammond, Indiana. We've talked about the libertarian dream coming true of, you know, the way that you regulate things. You don't have government regulate like chemical companies. Instead, what you do is you let people sue. And that will shame them or cost them money. And you spread let the bad word about how nasty they are get out. It turns out that this guy, Mr. Kennedy, who was the owner, Carl Kennedy, the co-owner of this Freedom Industries that has polluted the water in West Virginia, took over $1 million from his employees as withholding, you know, for taxes to the federal government and put it in his own pocket, apparently. He's a twice-convicted felon. He was also convicted of selling cocaine. And then became a government informant, became a snitch. Very interesting. So we've covered that. We've covered the minimum wage. We've covered the unemployment situation. What's going on in Congress? We're going to get Shane on in a little bit to tell us what happened in the Supreme Court this morning. But this is something that I think is fascinating. George W. Bush was a war criminal. I mean, there's no way around saying that. George W. Bush was a war criminal, but the Republicans are now doing everything they can to erase that fact from the history books and actually try to make sure that Obama shares in the blame for Bush's war crimes. Case in point, Guantanamo Bay. It's an abomination, a Republican abomination. It violates both international and U.S. law. And is, according to Matthew Alexander's former senior military interrogator in Iraq, Al-Qaeda's number one recruiting tool. Despite the unconstitutional horrors and atrocities that have taken place at Gitmo since it first started taking in prisoners 12 years ago, the prison doors are still open. and the horrors are continuing. Right now, as I speak, there are 155 men being detained at Gitmo. And according to a new report by the human rights group Reprieve, 33 of those men are on a hunger strike in protest of their detainment and the conditions at the prison. That includes 16 men who are being force-fed, which means they're going through unthinkable pain as military officers shove food through a feeding tube that goes into their nose and down their throats. And the worst part of all of this is that many of these men have already been cleared for release by the U.S. government. But because Gitmo's doors are still open, these men are still prisoners. And that's largely thanks to Republicans on Capitol Hill. Republicans say they're worried about closing Gitmo because they think Gitmo detainees being released will turn around and attack America. That really has nothing to do with it. The real reason why Republicans are keeping Gitmo open is because they're still concerned about the legacy of George W. Bush. And they know that one of the biggest stains on his presidency are the atrocities and international war crimes that have been committed at Guantanamo Bay. So Republicans are trying to pass on some of that blame for Gitmo to President Obama. Obama made it clear before he was even president that he wanted to shut down Gitmo for good. He campaigned on that promise. He repeated it throughout his presidency. But Republicans are blocking the Obama administration's attempts to shutter Gitmo by passing legislation that prohibits the government from using federal dollars to close down the prisons. They'd rather prolong the torture that's taking place at Gitmo than deal any more blows to the Bush legacy or any victories to the Obama presidency. Which means that men like Shaker Amer are stuck in the worst kind of limbo. Amer is one of the 77 men currently being detained at Guantanamo who have already been cleared for release by both the Bush and Obama administrations. These men are not and never were terrorists or criminals of any sort. They committed no crimes against the United States or anybody else. They were swept up when the Bush administration was offering a $5,000 bounty for members of Al-Qaeda. And because $5,000 is more than a decade's income in Afghanistan, a lot of innocent people got sold to gullible American soldiers. Shaker Amer is also one of the detainees who's being force-fed because he's on a hunger strike to protest his illegal detention. I mean, he's being detained even after he's been found not guilty of everything. Amer told Reprieve that, quote, I was strapped to the bed for 24 hours except to use the toilet. The force-feeding tube was in 24 hours a day. We would be fed for 30 to 40 minutes each time with Ensure cans, two cans three times a day. Some of the prisoners became zombies as if they were already dead. I dropped weight to 130 pounds. I told the doctors, I want to die peacefully. I want no intervention. But they refused this. Meanwhile, as Mr. Amer is being force-fed, his family back in the United Kingdom is worried sick about him. And because he's been in prison for so long, he hasn't even met one of his children. The Amer family has reached out to British Prime Minister David Cameron, who has discussed the case directly with President Obama. There's also an ongoing police investigation in the UK into how Mr. Amer had been treated by both US and UK officials. Mr. Amer deserves to be sent home to his family and to live out his life free of force feedings and torture. I mean, the guy's innocent of everything. He's not a criminal. The fact that Guantanamo Bay is still open is more proof that Republicans are willing to put politics ahead of people's lives because of their ongoing efforts to sabotage and tarnish the Obama presidency at every chance possible. 155 men are being treated like animals and are being denied even the most basic of human rights. The Republican complicity in this kind of torture needs to stop. They need to stop passing laws making it impossible for the president to close Gitmo. At the same time, you know, President Obama is not just all guiltless in this. He needs to stand up to the Republicans. He needs to make enough noise that he shames them into letting him keep his campaign promise and do the right thing for this country by closing Guantanamo. It's time for us to close the book on one of the darkest chapters in American history. And see, if he had closed Gitmo the day that he came into office, as he intended to do, or as soon as he came into office, there would be, I mean, it would be just Guantanamo would be Bush's thing. It would be totally isolated to the Bush administration. It would be Bush's big war crime in the stain of it, like the Alien and Sedition Acts in John Adams' administration. You know, it expired the day that he left office. It was written that way. And then we got this guy with this 4-methyl cyclohexane methanol, 4-MCHM, used to wash coal, Carl Lemley Kennedy Jr. II. In 1987, he pleaded guilty to selling between 10 and 12 ounces of cocaine. This is according to the Charleston Gazette. In 2005, he was charged with tax evasion and willful failure to pay employees withholdings to the government. He pleaded guilty to both charges in U.S. District Court. He admitted that between 2000 and 2003, while he was an accountant for Freedom Industries, this is the co-founder of the company, Polka Blending and New River Chemical Company, he withheld more than $1 million from employees' paychecks that he never passed on to the federal government. See, this is how you get rich if you're a Republican, right? He also owed more than $200,000 in state taxes. He took steps to conceal a large portion of his income from the Internal Revenue Service by, among other things, using his position as an accountant to ensure a W-2 form was not filed in his name, the court document reads. Using corporate funds for his personal benefit and writing corporate checks to cash for his personal enrichment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But, of course, the worst part of it is that his company now has caused 300,000 people to be without water, and we're having to pay the bill. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Kathleen in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Hey, Kathleen, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's up? Kathleen? Okay, she is watching her TV, and there's a delay, about a half a minute or so, between the, you know, being here and being on the air. So, Alan in Bear, Delaware. Alan, thanks for watching. So, therefore, listen to your phone instead of the TV. Hey,
Hi,
Alan.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
A little different perspective on this. I don't hear it talked that much, but I was down in Cancun a few years ago, and they have a value-added tax on basically almost anything you buy.
Right.
I was just curious why we couldn't adopt something like that and put it into a trust fund to help out with these medical issues and poverty and things where it's really needed, and to have a trust fund that can't be touched. It makes me sick when I look back, and I believe it was from Reagan on up, these politicians going and raided the Social Security trust fund, put an IOU in there. They knew they'd never pay back.
Well, no, that's not true.
And now
that's not true. Stop. That is not true. The Social Security Trust Fund is just fine, thank you very much. It's invested in U.S. Treasuries, which are government debt. But, you know, George W. Bush was born with $1 million in government treasuries in his trust fund. Government treasuries are the safest investment in the world, U.S. government treasuries. And that's what the Social Security Trust Fund is invested in. So, and in order to earn some interest. And that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Now, I know that the people who hate Social Security have been promulgating this lie that the Social Security Trust Fund was raided and its money was used for other things. And here's the logic that they use to get there is Social Security, you know, invests $2 trillion in treasuries. So it's essentially loaning the government $2 trillion. It's buying $2 trillion worth of debt. And so it's loaning the government $2 trillion. The government spends that $2 trillion, and that's their logic. Therefore, it's gone. But it's not gone. The government pays back the treasuries. We have always have, always will. It's not, you know, it's not a problem. It's not an issue. So Social Security Trust Fund is fine. Here's how the VAT tax would be so valuable. Here's how Germany does it, for example. The total VAT tax on an automobile, you know, because at every stage of manufacturing, there's a small tax added as value is added. So from, you know, making coke into iron, making iron into steel, making steel into rolled steel, making rolled steel into car doors, making car doors into cars. At every step along the way, there's a small tax, and it adds up to about 18% on a German car. So what they do is they say, when we're going to export a German car to the United States, we're going to take an 18% deduction because only Germans are supposed to pay the VAT tax. So Americans don't have to pay the tax. So when Americans buy cars made in Germany, they're 18% cheaper. On the other hand, if an American car is going to be sold in Germany, an American-made car is going to be sold in Germany, they say, Germans pay VAT taxes, and you guys don't collect them, but we will. And so we're placing an 18% tax on the American car when it hits our shores. So the result is functionally a 30%, almost a 40% tariff, about a 36% tariff. And Germany does this, South Korea does it, Taiwan does it, China does it, Japan does it. Many of the other European countries do it, but they're not major manufacturing powerhouses. You're absolutely right, Alan. We need a VAT tax. So, but don't worry about Social Security. That trust fund is just fine. Thank you very much for the call. Sorry to cut you off there at the end. We just flat out ran out of time. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This California millionaire is trying to get the minimum wage in California raised to $12 an hour by 2016. Why? Because he wants to, because he's a conservative Republican. And he thinks it's crazy that the government is providing $1 trillion over 5 years, the government of California, $1 trillion over 5 years to, in benefits, in, you know, stuff like food stamps and Medicare and all that kind of stuff, in benefits to people who are actually working full time. At the minimum wage. Because if you work full time at the minimum wage, you make so little that you still are in poverty and you qualify for these government benefits. And this was the this is how, you know, Clinton and Gingrich, quote, ended poverty or ended welfare as we know it. They time limited it. They said you can't be on welfare for more than 5 years. And the whole idea was, you know, we're going to stop multi-generational welfare. During the Reagan administration, they had spun out this myth that black girls specifically, this is one of the most racist myths that was ever put out, that black teenage girls would try to get pregnant in school so that they could then get government benefits and live independently and have a good, happy life the rest of the day. In fact, they'd try to have as many babies as they could because they got paid for each baby. And, it's mind-boggling that anybody would, A, believe that, or, B, that we would be basing policy on it, but both happened. And so they said, okay, let's just cut them off at 5 years, period. And that was the welfare reforms that Clinton and Gingrich did. But they said, but wait a minute, these people are still poor. I mean, even if they're working, we're going to force them to go back to work after 5 years. They have to go to work. Put their kids in child care, whatever it takes, but they got to go to work. But they're still poor. So we have to give benefits to working people. And this invented a new business model. So a bunch of companies said, hey, this is cool. If we pay very, very little money, the minimum wage, or close to it, then, you know, people come work for us, and we're only paying, like, you know, 50 to 70% of the cost of their living. Typically, you know, 100% of your cost of living is paid for by your job. But the 30 to 50% that isn't paid for with at the minimum wage, they, you know, it's picked up by the state. So this Republican, I keep saying this to Republicans. Why don't you get behind increasing the minimum wage? It would reduce government benefits. You got people who are no longer in poverty. And Ron Unz is his name, and he's pushing this thing. I mean, you know, Jerry Brown just raised the minimum wage to $10 over the next 2 years, but Ron Unz wants it to go to $12 because he says at that point you're going to get enough people who no longer qualify for state benefits that you're going to save the state $1 trillion over 5 years. So basically, he's a multimillionaire, and he doesn't want to pay taxes with money going to poor people. He's a conservative. And we've got this business model where the money is going to poor people. It's totally bizarre. Anyhow, Shano, how about a Supreme Court report? It just occurred to me. I should have asked. We have enough time for it, don't we? Yeah. Okay.
Hey. Yeah, this morning, the Supreme Court case that we've been talking about ahead of time.
you know, because it was heard in the U.S. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, had to do with the NLRB and President Obama's recess appointments. And Victoria talked about it a little bit. If just to refresh everyone's memory on the facts of it, during one of the Senate's recesses, which was kind of a recess and kind of not a recess, we've heard about these pro forma sessions where they come in every 3 days and they gavel in and gavel out.
Right.
Back in 2000, going from 2011 to 2012, the Senate was doing this every 3 days, just coming in, gaveling out, doing no business, explicitly saying we're not going to do any business. So the president recess appointed three people to the NLRB. After that appointment, those three appointments, the NLRB convened.
National Labor Relations Board.
Yeah. They issued some decisions, and one of the losers, Noel Canning, in one of those rulings, sued and said, hey, those three appointments were not constitutional. There wasn't a quorum on the NLRB at the time the decision was issued, so I'm suing and I'm challenging this. And that's what the court heard today. Whether or not the president can recess a point when the Congress isn't really in recess. They're right. Just coming in every 3 days. And Victoria was right. I haven't read any of the other accounts yet, but I would be surprised. It would probably be a 9-0 decision, I'm saying. Yeah. I really think
this because the whole idea of the president being able to recess appoint somebody rather than it going through the Senate was that in 1787, when the Constitution was written, there were long stretches of time when you couldn't get a quorum. You couldn't get people from the farther away states. Sure. They would take
6 months off.
Yeah.
And it was put in there so that you could take those 6 months off, and it took a long time to get back to D.C., and they wanted the government to still function. So the framers said, well, during those breaks, we're going to pass, the Senate can pass along, when they go into recess, that power to recess appointment, but only to the end of that session.
Right.
And it's because the Congress will be unavailable. And essentially, nearly all the justices, Justice Thomas never speaks, but all the justices that spoke and asked questions seemed to indicate that the unavailability of Congress is now a myth. Congress is always available. They can always be in Washington, D.C. on 24 hours notice, you know, unless there's a snowstorm, and that's 48 hours. So, therefore, this the recess appointment clause may be just a relic that is unnecessary anymore. And that what's happening right now is instead of using this clause because people are unavailable to come vote, it's the political outcomes are trying to go around Congress.
Right, and this started with Reagan, I believe.
Started with Reagan, yeah. It all started with Reagan.
Everything started with Reagan. So the net of this might be that these NLRB decisions will be knocked down.
Yeah, there are dozens of them.
Yeah, but then they'll probably be just redecided now that the president has...
Right.
Yeah.
And so this does have an effect on prior decisions, but now that the filibuster has been fixed by the Senate, it's probably not going forward because you only need a simple majority now in the Senate to get these nominations through.
Yeah. Interesting times. Thank you, Shana Farnham.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And Shane Farnan is not only our associate producer, but he's also a news reporter for the Talk Radio News Service for the Supreme Court, an actual law school graduate. 28 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Republican millionaires supporting raising the minimum wage. And you thought pigs would fly. No, actually, there's logic to it. It will cut their, he doesn't want his tax dollars going to poor people. So, well, actually, I don't know if that's his literal explanation, but he thinks it's a lousy business deal that tax dollars are going to support poor people who are working. And I agree with him. So, let's just make this work. John in Elmwood Park, Illinois. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Oh, hey, Tom. Great show today, and it's really sad what's happening to West Virginia.
Yeah.
This just shows that libertarianism just simply does not work. It's a fantasy. You're always going to need government to be a big brother to watch, these corporations to make sure that they're doing stuff within the legal limits. But the reason why I'm calling is I did a little research online about this Freedom Industries company. And if you go to Google and you type in West Virginia Corporation lookup,
mm-hmm.
You can find every corporation in West Virginia and who owns them and who are the vice president, president, things like that. And the two names mentioned are Gary Southern and Carl Kennedy. And they both have registered to a P.O. box
right? Which I thought was kind of weird because in my state of Illinois and other states too, you always need a physical actual address. You cannot register a company with a P.O. box.
Hmm.
So I thought that was interesting how they registered, you know, this Freedom Industries with a P.O. box and got away with it.
Yeah. I don't know the laws in West Virginia. Every state has their own set of rules and laws regarding how corporations are treated in that state. Delaware is the most liberal. California is probably the most strict, but it varies state by state. And I just
for tax purposes, most states do not allow a P.O. box because they need to be able to get a hold of somebody if there's a tax liability. So it just seems kind of fishy to me how they register with a P.O. box to, you know, Gary Southern and Carl Kennedy. Both of them have P.O. boxes instead of, like, physical addresses.
Are the P.O. boxes in West Virginia?
Yeah, they're both in West Virginia.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing then that they're actually, their company is probably located someplace else. They are probably located someplace else.
Isn't that just so odd how they can get away with that type of stuff? I mean, it's just,
yeah, I you know, apparently West Virginia's, you know, corporate charter laws are loose enough that's allowed. I mean, it's I know that, you know, there's a building in the Bahamas that's got something like 14,000 corporations and American corporations in it, you know, that are registered there for tax purposes. Now, I don't think that they're using P.O. boxes, though. I think they're using, like, suite numbers or something. But basically, it's a giant post office, you know, box or a bunch of post office boxes. But
yeah, anybody who listens could just look it up. You go to Google, you type in West Virginia Corporation, look up, and, yeah, they have them registered as P.O. boxes.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. John, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for the heads up on that. I'll see what I can learn about it. Karen in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Karen, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Well, first of all, I want to talk about cannabis and banking, but also I want to say about the deal in West Virginia. I've heard a few or seen a few rumors that Freedom, whatever it is kind of connected to the Koch brothers, too. So
Freedom Industries apparently distributes a product made by Georgia-Pacific Chemical, which is owned by the Koch brothers. So that's not the kind of connection that you know, leaves any dirt on the Koch brothers. I don't think that this is the kind of connection that you would use to vilify anybody, frankly.
Okay. Anyway, in regard to cannabis or marijuana and banking in Washington State, a lot of big mainstream banks don't want to touch it. Washington State is trying to create a publicly owned trust to facilitate the cannabis revenues in the state of Washington. That's SB 5955, put in proposed by Senator Bob Hasegawa. There's going to be a hearing on Thursday at 1:30 p.m. at the Senate Committee on Financial Institutions and Housing and Insurance Act in Olympia, and I wanted to get that word out.
That's interesting. Are they talking about creating a state bank, or is it just going to be some sort of a financial institution that can play the role of a bank, but isn't actually a state bank? Because if they're creating a state bank, they could do like North Dakota and actually start, you know, doing mortgages and things and supporting small businesses.
They're trying to be careful how they word it. So it's a little, you know, because a state bank doesn't seem to be quite the thing in Washington State yet.
Yeah. State bank would be a really good thing. I mean, the state of Washington does billions of dollars in business every year. And if all that money ran through, you know, right now they're running that money through the big Wall Street banks and they're making the profit off it. And if they instead ran it through their own state bank and kept their, you know, their various funds and pensions and whatever in their own state bank, then all the profit that's made by that could accrue back to the voters of the citizens of the state of Washington. And I mean, that's how it works in North Dakota.
And there's another factor, too. If the cannabis or marijuana business in Washington State is forced to be cash only, that's an open invitation to organized crime and just criminals in general.
Sure.
Because it's so easy to walk in and walk away with the cash proceeds.
Yeah. And you see that right here in Washington, D.C., where most of the cab drivers will not take credit cards. They only want cash. And they finally forced them to put credit card machines in their cabs. And still, I took a cab the other day, and the guy says, my machine doesn't work. You know, and I was sitting there, and it was turned on, and it was working just fine, obviously. But he insisted, it doesn't work. You got to pay me cash. And it's like, oh, yeah, I know what that means. You know, cash-only businesses can be problematic. And that's how we used to know. There's a famous pizza parlor down in Dallas. I'm not going to name it, but the way that we knew that it was mob run was, you know, it's a cash only business, and it's like, this guy was an old friend of Jack Ruby's. And thank you for the call, Karen, and hopefully, and thanks for the information. Hopefully, Washington State will take it a step farther and actually create a state bank. I mean, the marijuana business could be the thing that provokes the state to do something that would be really good for the state. Ed in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? I originally called about the Superfund law. I don't know if anybody told you about the Democratic Superfund measure that they put in. They tried to put in. The Republicans overturned it.
A woman called in earlier and said there were four pieces of legislation that the Republicans were considering in the House right now that in aggregate would basically eliminate the APA.
That's right. And the Democrats tried to overrule that by putting in a law that would take – prevent H.R. 2279 from taking effect if it would result in the long-term exposure of vulnerable populations within 5 miles of waste sites to substances that can contaminate drinking water or cause ailments such as respiratory disease, cancer, or reproductive disorders. And the voting was exactly the opposite. The GOP overturned that one, too, you know?
Wow.
I mean, the whole thing's probably not going to go anywhere in the Senate.
So, wait a minute. The Republicans voted in favor of cancer and reproductive disorders?
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct.
My God.
And, I mean, the vote was the same. The GOP changes to the Superfund law was 225 for and 188 against. The Democrats voting for the Superfund measure was 188 for and 225 against. And every Republican voted for, you know, changing the Superfund law to let the states handle it, you know.
Right.
But
right.
But then I was listening and I wondered about the Supreme Court appointments. Were any of them made by Republican Supreme Court appointments made during a recess? So that if they work that into the law, can we throw Scalia out?
No, all of the guys who are sitting right now. Now Earl Warren was a recess appointment. Stuart Potter was a recess appointment. What were some of the more famous names? Shane, there was... Oliver Wendell Holmes was a recess appointment,
no one that's alive today.
Nobody who's on the court today, yeah.
Oh, well, yep. We'll have to hope for heart attacks, I guess.
No, God forbid. No, don't talk like that, Ed. No, we don't want to do that. We just want to hope for retirements and you know, things like that. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. Diane in San Jose, California. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Diane.
I'm not going to – I have to go into the other room because, I can hear you.
Okay.
Tom, are you there?
I am.
Okay. Sorry. Tom, I'm just thinking that even though that Republican seems more generous than most, $12 an hour is not enough to support oneself.
I know. And, you know, probably if he wants to be
secure. If a person has a share, two people can support themselves in some cities. And in some cities, of course, like I'm in Santa Clara, where five people died, homeless people died, because they were cold. So I just wanted to say I am recovering because I took in a couple of people. And then I found out that they died on the streets in Berkeley. So it's hard for me to, I try to be less emotional, but, you know, it's.
So you took in a couple of homeless people for a while, and then they died during the cold in the streets in Berkeley?
Well, yeah, really wonderful woman. I can't even tell you her name. She was, yeah, what happened was one woman had pneumonia.
Oh, my.
And I tried to get her housing.
Right.
She was a senior.
Right.
And I heard she bled in the streets. So I don't even want to go back to Berkeley Berkeley is supposed to be such a progressive town.
Yeah. Diane, I'm sorry we're out of time, but thank you for sharing your story with us, and thank you for being such a fine person.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Boy, that's got to be tough when you get to know somebody. We'll be back. Welcome back. Rusty in Lorena, Texas, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Rusty, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I really originally called him Guantanamo, but you had to mention Jack Ruby, so I have to mention that my dad used to play saxophone for Jack Ruby and his clubs down in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Well, he knew what was going on in that town, I'll tell you.
I guess he did. And anyway, the thing I wanted to say about Guantanamo is I voted for Obama because I'm from Texas, and I knew George Bush. And what was that famous saying about I knew George Bush, and you ain't know George Bush?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, I knew Jack Kennedy. Anyway. You know Jack Kennedy, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, well, George Bush, I never liked him from the beginning, but anyway, the whole deal is that what I want to say about Guantanamo is I voted for Obama because he was going to be the antithesis to George Bush.
Right.
And I was really hoping he'd close down Guantanamo. And one of my main concerns about Guantanamo is I was in the Marine Corps, and I know what it's like to be in the Marine Corps, and you have to follow orders, you know? You have to follow orders. And I'm concerned about the young Marines that are having to do all that crap down there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. It's dehumanizing.
Yes. For both sides.
That's right.
That's all I got to say about that.
Okay. Rusty, thank you for the call. Thanks for the heartfelt sharing. That's a tough one. But, you know, Rusty's so right. It is there's this thing called jailer's syndrome. You know, the jailers are as much prisoners as the prisoners are. And the people who the Republicans in Congress are forcing to, you know, they're preventing Obama from closing Guantanamo. They have for 5 years now, every year, pass a law saying he can't spend federal money to close Guantanamo. And he's every year he says, I want to close this. And they say, no, we're not going to let you. And they're doing it because, in my opinion, because they want to be able to, they want history to say Guantanamo was Bush Obama, not just Bush's war crime. And these, not only are the prisoners being injured by this, but the soldiers and Marines who are guarding them and who are force feeding them and whatnot, they're being brutalized by the same system. And Rusty is just spot on. You know, I mean, you're in the military, you have to take orders, and sometimes that involves taking orders to do really horrible things, and that leaves deep scars, deep wounds. I have an acquaintance who relative actually who served in the Korean War and came back from Korea and threw away his medals and said, I'm never going to talk about that again, and literally never did. During that war, our soldiers, because the North Koreans were sending women up to the front lines, civilians up to the front lines with hand grenades in their armpits, and then they'd lift their hand, they'd get close enough to the soldiers, they'd lift their hands and their hand grenades would go off and they'd kill the American soldiers. And so the American soldiers started just mowing down civilians who were fleeing, who were coming toward them, because they didn't know if they were carrying hand grenades. And it was just like so many people came back from South Korea, from the Korean War, with just horrible PTSD. I know one of them. We'll be back. 10 minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and John in Cayucos. How do you say that? Cayucos?
Cayucos?
Say it?
Cayucos, yeah.
Cayucos, California. So, what's up, John?
Yep. Hey, thanks, Tom. I just have a quick question. It's kind of rhetorical for you and probably almost all of your listeners, but I think we need to get this out there. If Social Security is broke, and you were talking about that earlier, if they're so broke, then why do the Republicans and many Democratic congresspersons want to hand it over to the private industry?
Why would the private, why would the banksters want it if it was so broke and losing money?
Right. Yeah. Great question.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. And they do want it. And just ask Pete Peterson. I mean, those Wall Street guys, they are so itching to get their hands on that $2.7 trillion dollars in that trust fund. And,
hey, if it's
and,
good
you
enough
know,
for George Bush, it's good enough for them.
Yeah, yeah. $1 trillion a year cash flow. They can make a, you know, they make a tenth of a penny off every dollar that goes through. They'll be, you know, richer than God.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they already yes. are
rich. And I hope you enjoyed those T-shirts I brought you down in Santa Monica. I drove 180 miles to come see you.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Which
no,
ones?
Not 180. I'm sorry. I drove 98 miles to come see you.
Are those the Union T-shirts?
No, they're the bakery T-shirts. They were green. The Made in America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those are great. Thank you.
Yeah, they're warm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, John. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That was very kind of you.
Thank you. I hope that that people understand Social Security isn't bankrupt any more than George Bush is.
Yeah, there you go. Or the Bush family. The whole Bush family is well invested
yeah.
in treasuries. And, you know, yeah. John, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Rick in Weston, West Virginia. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Yeah, you know, on this chemical spill, it only rated a brief mention on local channels, which are all affiliates of major stations. Because, you know, the media stations here are owned by large corporations, and the extent of it didn't really start coming out till Sunday evening, as far as I know.
Yeah.
And that's when they referred to it as a chemical spill. They didn't identify it.
Yeah.
And you know, our governor is a Republican in wolf's clothing, as far as I'm concerned. But that, you know, it'll make the people wake up. This state has been ravaged by the extraction industry.
Yeah.
People need jobs, understand, but you ought to rent a twin-engine plane and fly over that part of the state. You know, down in those counties in the southern part of West Virginia, the birth rate, the birth defect rate is 26 times higher than the national average.
Wow.
It looks like a moonscape. It does.
Yeah.
And, you know, all our governors are friends of big coal, big timber, and big
Well, they got to be to get elected, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that's,
they do.
You know, that's the gift that our Supreme Court gave us.
And the corporations call the shots. Simple
right.
as that.
Right, and that's because our Supreme Court said that money is the same thing as speech and is therefore protected by the First Amendment protection of free speech.
And I'll make a brief comment. You know what? Let all them free people... people were not convicted of anything, that were innocent, go back home, and let's get all these corporate criminals and Bush and his cabinet down there and let them see how they like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
there
we
you
wouldn't
go.
Treat them as bad as that, but, you know, some of the people on Wall Street and these large coal companies and whatever had to do time in regular jails instead of paying billions of dollars in fines, was a drop in the bucket. All this nonsense at end, I'll bet you, real quick.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, we need to amend the Constitution to say that money is not speech. It's just very, very straightforward stuff. Rick, thanks a lot for the call. Raymond in Hemp Hill, Texas. Hey, Raymond.
How are you doing?
Good.
What I was calling about was the Guantanamo situation.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that these detainees were detainees until they were determined innocent.
Yes.
And now they were bought and paid for. They're serving of use, whether it's political or monetary, since it costs so much to keep them.
Mm-hmm.
They're serving against their will, and to me, that's just the definition of a slave.
Hmm. So keeping innocent people at Guantanamo is a violation of the 13th Amendment.
That is what I would. I never have heard anyone even consider it.
Yeah, no, you make a lot of sense actually, because we did pay a bounty to get those guys. I don't know about all of them, but certainly many of them, and particularly most of the innocent ones, we paid bounties for because people would just turn in their, you know, the guy that they'd been having a feud with, you know, the Hatfields would turn in the McCoys and vice versa, kind of thing. That's an interesting one, Raymond. Thank you for calling. Thanks for sharing that. Henry in Gresham, Oregon. Hey, Henry, you wanted to talk about recess appointments?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Love your show. Quick question. If
if a recess appointment becomes an appendage of the Constitution, then by extension, wouldn't the Second Amendment with militias no longer being required also be an appendage?
Oh, you mean a relic?
Hello?
You mean a relic?
An appendage, like something that is no longer required.
A relic. Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, the two reasons why the Second Amendment were passed was, one, to protect the slave patrols in the South, which were the Southern militias, and two, because the founders did not want America to have a standing army during time of peace, and they were very, very wary about that. And, And that's why Article 1, Section 8 does not allow Congress to appropriate any amount of money for the military for longer than a two-year period, because they didn't want to have an army when there was no war going on. And,
the Supreme Court does take down the recess appointments. In theory, they're also paving the road for the Second Amendment to be taken down as well, wouldn't they?
We'll see. If they determine that parts of the Constitution are relics and therefore can be ignored... Yeah, they might be setting a precedent for something like that. That's a very interesting thought. Thank you, Henry, for that. Coming up tomorrow, all the latest news and information that you won't be hearing from the corporate-owned news media. Plus, more and more states opting to make pot more legally available. Why aren't the right-wingers still demonizing it? I'll challenge conservative Charles Colley Stimson of the Heritage Foundation. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get over to free-don.org and help out Don Siegel. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at stamps.com and our website, tomhartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at tomhartman.com. Thank you.